story. And on that point, I want to talk about another story that has a lot of holes in it, and I want your expertise as someone who has worked in tactical responses. You know, you're a specialist in high-risk situations, and we've got this story that's this tragedy that's come out of Weambla, and my condolences to all who were affected and the officers that lost their lives. And I mean, it is truly a tragedy, but it's a tragedy and a story that was presented with many, many holes in it. So I would really love to get your expertise and your analysis on this story, because it's now being used to, number one, tighten gun laws, number two, which are already very tight in this country, and number two, now we're being told that Christians are the problem, which is fascinating. So first and foremost, the official narrative that we were presented with, Kerry, changed so many times that it's hard to even know what actually happened at Weambla. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I have to agree with everything you've said there. And as you acknowledge as well, I mean, I have to do the same. The tragic loss of life is, you know, it's destroyed families and things that they will never heal from in their lives, their families that are left behind. And it is a tragic loss of young life and police officers' lives as well. So look, when it first occurred, I suppose from the very outset, I was absolutely blown away at the speed in which these officers' names and details were released. So that, without getting into the response side of it, as in from a tactical point of view, I suppose, or policing point of view, but just the fact that these names were released so quickly. I mean, that scene was managed and in control by the police force at the time. So there is no way that those officers' names were released to the media unless it was done by the police. We don't do that. I mean, we have a shooting here or a death here or anything. There are no names released for at least 24 to 48 hours. We just don't do it. So to wake up the morning after the shooting and see photos of these poor young police officers that had lost their lives, and, you know, photos of them holding puppies and things like that, it was a very emotional response to it, which I think was a planned response. We just never release names that quickly. That's from the first thing that I noticed that was odd, is we never release names that quickly.
Is it because it's still under investigation odd. And...
Yes, 100%. Right. It's the full details then, at the time they were released, the full details were not known. I mean, even the minor details of what had occurred were not known. They wouldn't have even had time to go through all of the body-worn footage and actually ascertain what happened at that point. So the whole reason those people were identified was because someone in that organisation, the police force, gave those names to the media. I mean, they were out... They're out remote. They weren't in a CBD where there was media right there on hand to see these people or know who was there. It was that was an incredibly concerning thing straight away, which made me think there's an immediate emotional response they were triggering from anyone who saw this. So there was a media agenda, a play at hand straight away, which is the most glaring thing that, you know, happened straight away. It's unheard of for officers' names to be released that quickly.
What about sending that many officers out for what we were initially told was a welfare check?
Yeah, so, and that raised questions as well when they say it's a welfare check. So we got told welfare check, and then we got told missing person response. So those sort of jobs, we would send one crew to, which is two staff in one car. If we've sent four staff, that means somewhere along the lines there's a higher level of risk that's been identified. So we've deemed it too risky to just send two staff. We've decided to send four. So, but we don't send four staff to a missing person report or a concern for welfare when the person that we're looking for is at their home, at their family's farm. So it makes no sense to do that when the person we're looking for is at his family's farm. We don't need to send four staff to make sure he is at his family's home. It doesn't make sense. So to me, if we've sent four officers, there's potentially already a higher level of risk, which means it's highly likely those four junior police officers should not have been sent there at all. It's similar to what happened here with Zachary Rolfe is our executive did not complete a risk assessment. They completed no plans, nothing on what they had at hand. They just said, yeah, grab those guys and send them out bush. And the next phone call 300 kilometres out bush 2 days later is, oh, they've actually just shot someone. And the boss is going to panic mode. Oh, we haven't done our job. We didn't do our plans. This wasn't done correctly. So for me, if we're sending four officers, that's not a standard amount of officers for that type of job. It just, we wouldn't do that.
So, and you wouldn't send junior officers. If you know that it's high risk, you're not going to send junior officers into that situation.
No, unless it's an immediate response where you have to get someone there quickly to secure an area before over there that the CERT team arrived to do that job. So it made no sense in what we were told there. And then there was all the differing stories coming out about potentially the officers jumping fences to get in there. And the next issue was the neighbour being shot in the back while he's running away. That to me, again, with the people that were in that, on that farm, it makes no sense as to why they would shoot their neighbour whom they know as he's running away. So we were sold the line that they were, you know, now domestic terrorists who believed in God. That's apparently the main issue. But if they were anti-police, why would they shoot their neighbour in the back as he's running away? That makes no sense either. So, and we haven't heard the full details on that yet either, and we probably won't now until the coronial, which could be a year or 2 years away before we even hear that. So we don't even know which weapon or which round caliber bullet was found in the neighbour. So was it one of the alleged perpetrators, or was it a one of the officers' firearms, you know, in a firefight? Who knows? But we haven't heard the results from that yet.
Well, the problem is that we're making absolute statements when we don't actually have the results. And that's what the mainstream media has done here, and the Queensland Police have done. For the public to be asking the questions that you're asking right now is very fair and reasonable, because we have been lied to so much over the past 3 years, and we have questions, and rightly so. Nothing adds up with this story. I want to play some footage now and get your thoughts on this. This is the footage of just recently released, saying that this is now being deemed a terrorist attack. And there's some footage from the ABC as well that we'll tag onto that. It's now being deemed a terrorist attack, and the main problem being that these people believed in the Bible. Take a look at this.
Where are they getting their theology from? Is the evidence pointing towards online forums or church groups or particular preachers or anything like that?
No, it's actually just interpretation of the various iterations of the Bible.
Was there anything, I guess, particularly in her diary that led to the moment it spiraled? Was it COVID?
I think it's not just one thing. There appears to be a range of different catalyst events. They certainly had their views around anti-vaccination, and as a consequence of that, anti-government sentiment.
What is pre-millennialism?
Premillennialism is a form of Christian evangelical textualism. So they basically understand the world as plagued by corruption and evil, and they believe that into this context, the series of events that will herald the last days of mankind effectively will emerge. So that includes a rapture, which is a horrendously violent event linked to judgment for sin, tribulation, the battle of Armageddon, and the end of days. And this is drawn primarily from the book of Revelation. It's really important that this is actually labelled as an act of terrorism. We're very familiar, I suppose, with terrorism and religion being particularly targeted at Muslim communities. And in this case, we're seeing it for the very first time in a different context. So we're talking about an extreme fringe, but there are certainly others out there who would subscribe to these views. So we need to understand that, for example, new forms of violent extremism and terrorism emerging in relation to rapidly increasing economic inequality, catastrophic natural disasters that really have the potential to tie into worldviews. So biblical proportioned floods and fire, for example. The COVID vaccination mandates and lockdowns are seen as some sort of government attempt to coerce and control the population, which ties into conspiracy theories. And now we have social media in which these ideas can be spread without regulation, through encrypted messaging apps.
Just one final question. If anyone watching has a suspicion that someone they know, someone they love, has these kinds of extreme and violent views, what should they do?
And the default option is obviously the National Security Hotline, which has been quite successful for the government for many years.
So now what happens? I'm caught out with a Bible, has the Book of Revelation in it, and the police ask me why I'm carrying this extremist book around with me. Is that what we're facing?
It appears to be, and it's absolutely ludicrous. So, and you know, when you look at that sort of stuff in relation to the shooting, I mean, if the shooting occurred exactly as the police are saying it did, then that needs to come out, and they need to address that really quickly. Because when they whinge about conspiracy theorists and things like that, with stories with this many holes in it, it just feeds that. But what looks very obvious is it's an incredibly good opportunity for them to bring in further gun controls and ammunition limits, and identify people that apparently believe in God is now a terrorist activity, which is just simply unheard of. So, and this is where it feeds people that don't trust the government, is we sit here and go, well, hang on, you're giving us all the keys now to go, this is a staged, well, not staged as such, but this is an event that you're not telling us the truth on, but it's allowing you to bring in all of these other incredibly just insane and restrictive methodologies. Like, apparently now if you believe in God, yeah, you're a domestic terrorist. So, and with what we know police do in terms of investigating people like us, we have our phones tapped, everything bugged. I mean, I know my phones have been done by the NT police force because of media stuff I've done. If these people were such high-level terrorists, they would have a well-known background on these people, so they would know who they associate with, who they talk to, all their devices. They would know the layout of their land, so they would be a much higher risk to respond to, which is then takes you back to, well, that's why they had four officers going there, because you know these people. You've been investigating them for some time, so you can't now all of a sudden say they're domestic terrorists and be surprised. They would have known all about these people 6 months ago, 12 months ago, before they even got to that property. So same as they do here and same as we do here.
That's a very, very good point. Yeah, if these people were extremists, domestic terrorists, they would have been tracked for some time, and you would have known how risky it was to send people, and you certainly wouldn't have sent inexperienced officers. And that's just one of the many, many holes in this story. I'm watching carefully, because I saw recently coming out of the United States information that the FBI has been instructed to target Catholics. They're being seen as extremists. They were also the in California, the authorities were tracking churchgoers because they wanted to know whether they were still congregating during COVID, specifically churchgoers, no other religious group, just Christians. And mm-hmm. so the acts in Australia, the tracking that we're potentially going to see of Christians in Australia following this event, because we're apparently extremists now. And it's astounding to me. Anyone who, what they're saying is they're talking about a certain group of Christians here, premillennialism. That's what they're referencing here on the ABC report. But then they lump anyone who believes in, say, the return of Christ into this category, or the battle at Armageddon into this category. And that is anyone who's read the Book of Revelation. So that would mean any single Christian. Very, very alarming stuff. Kerry, well, thank you so much for your insight. As a former police sergeant, as someone who's been doing this for over a decade, and, you know, sees everything that's wrong with it, and I'm certain that there are more that feel like you, the question is, how do we solve this problem? And it is a widespread problem. And perhaps some people would say, maybe if more police stood up at the very beginning, we wouldn't be in this mess. Maybe if more nurses stood up in the beginning, we wouldn't be in this mess. Doctors, so on and so forth. But it seems that police are not immune to the psychological operation currently underway, just like anyone else. And we urge them as soon as possible to stand up. A couple of last words to your former colleagues.
Yeah, and I said this from the start when this was all occurring and we could see what was happening here. Our police, we are given this false fear that if we protest or walk off the job, we're going to be guilty of offences and go to prison. But we're not. And again, it's the, we hold the power to all the police. If they had have walked off the job the day these stupid mandates and disgusting, you know, things were forced on their colleagues, this would have stopped within 48 hours. That you've got, I mean, here we've got maybe, what, 8 executives sitting at the top, and there's 1,500 police officers. If they all had have stuck together and walked off the job, this would have stopped in its tracks immediately, because we hold the power. But again, when you get rid of your senior officers and you're left with children, not being offensive, but essentially I was a child at that age, they're not going to band together and go against the powers above them and be united. So what they've done is, we're no longer a united police force. If you had 1,000 people saying, yes, we're going to walk off the job, on the day you'd get maybe 20, and those 20 would be fired and moved on and replaced with 18-year-olds. So they need to stick together, look after the person next to you and behind you, and you guys hold the power to change this and to reshape our future.